Hello and welcome to Through the Bible with Les Feldick, an inspirational and informative half hour of insight into the heart of Scripture. In addition to teaching the Bible, Les is a full-time rancher, having a down-to-earth practical teaching style that makes the Bible come to life. All programs are available on audio tape, videotape, and in printed form. At the end of the program, there will be an address where you can contact the ministry. And now, here's Les Feldick with today's lesson.
Now, at a future program, we're going to show that yes, indeed, there will be multitudes of non-Jews who will have a salvation experience during all this turmoil, but they will not live very long to tell about it because it's going to be a period of time when they will almost be martyred immediately. And so these are the ones that I feel John sees now in a prophetic light, that all these who have been martyred for their faith will cry now, verse 10, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth?" And of course, we know he's going to. And then verse 11, "And white robes were given unto every one of them," that is, these who had been martyred for their faith. "And it was said unto them that they should rest yet for a little season, until their fellow servants also and their brethren that should be killed as they were should be fulfilled." Now that's all part of the fifth seal. Now we come down to the sixth seal. And remember, there's only seven that are holding this scroll together. Now the sixth seal, and remember, Christ is the one who is opening it in order to be able to read that mortgage, so to speak, and pay it off. Now remember, we're going back to that scroll that was in Revelation chapter 5. Now verse 12, "And I beheld, and when he had opened the sixth seal, lo, there was a great earthquake." Now remember, in Matthew 24, that was one of the things that Jesus mentioned, that there would be famine and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. Now we're already seeing a tremendous increase in earthquake activity. I think you're all aware of that. It's up in the thousands of percent increase in the last 20 or 30 years. And there are so many earthquakes taking place on the planet every day that the media doesn't even bother to report them. I think one day last week I read in one of the daily papers that there were, I think, three or four earthquakes. Not huge, but something like 4.6 or 5 on the Richter scale. And in various places, there was one in China, and I think there was one up in southern Russia, and one in Iran. But they're taking place every day. And this is contrary to history. It hasn't been that way. But here we come now in verse 12, and we're approaching now the midpoint of this 7 years. We're about at the end of 3.5 years as we get to the sixth seal. "And lo, there was a great earthquake. And the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood." Now, all you have to do is know the circumstances. We know that when there's tremendous earthquakes, there's more than likely volcanic eruptions as well. And as we know from the past, volcanoes can literally spew out so much dust into the atmosphere that the sun indeed can almost be blocked out and so forth. So I think that's all we have here. It isn't that God all of a sudden is going to blacken the sun per se, but as a result of these activities on the planet, the sun will become almost like we've already seen it at times, just like a little red glow. "And the moon became as blood," again, because of all the pollution that has been blown into the atmosphere. Then verse 13. Remember that this is God dealing primarily with the nation of Israel, as we showed in our closing remarks. Jeremiah said it's the time of Jacob's trouble. And as I've pointed out over the years, and for those of you who have been following now from Genesis on, that whenever God was dealing with Israel in the land, the supernatural was commonplace. Remember that? Beginning when Moses went into Egypt. The plagues, they were supernatural events under God's control. The opening of the Red Sea, supernatural. And the life of Samson and his escapades, supernatural. And the appearance of the angelic host at Christ's birth, supernatural. The opening of the prison when Peter was in prison by the use of an earthquake. What was it? Supernatural. And so this is what I'm talking about. That when God is dealing with the nation of Israel, as he will be now in these 7 years, we're dealing with the supernatural almost every day. Things that are beyond the ordinary. And so now in verse 13, we even have cosmic disturbances, where the stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. And heaven departs as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their place. In other words, tremendous earthquake activity. And this is only in the first half. The second half is going to be far worse. Verse 15. Now even the rulers, the men in high places, are getting shook. And the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, free men, hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains, and they actually plead for death. And they cry, fall on us, and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb. Now you see, for the last 1900 and some years, mankind has not seen the wrath of God. Now, we know there's been a lot of calamity. We know there's been all kinds of already earthquake activities and wars and famine and so forth, but that has never been the wrath of God. I've always maintained that the things that come on the human race that plague us are not acts of God's wrath. They are rather God permitting Satan to bring suffering and turmoil to God's creation. God is not in the business tonight of pouring out his wrath. He's a God of grace tonight. His grace, Paul says in Romans chapter 5, that where sin abounded, what's always greater? His grace abounds even more. But see, grace has ended now. That has ended with the outcalling of the church back there at the before the tribulation began. But now you see, we're seeing the wrath of the Lamb being poured out. Verse 17, and it's repeated twice in two verses. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? Now, I won't take time to go back and look at it, but you remember Psalms chapter 2? We've used it so often coming up through the Old Testament, that after mankind, Jew and Gentile, have rejected the king, and they're going to go into a period of perplexity and derision. And that's where the world is tonight. They don't know which way to turn. And then what does the next verse say in Psalms chapter 2? And then he shall pour out upon them his vexation and his wrath. See, it's no longer the age of grace. All right, now all these events then take us up to the midpoint of this 7 years. We've had the appearance of the Antichrist. We've had the permission, if I may use that word, for Israel to go back into temple worship. She's going to go back under the law, you might say. And, of course, she's getting closer to that all the time. And then we have the great invasion from the north. And I should have made a comment on that I didn't have time. I know there are those. In fact, let's just back up, because I don't like to skip something, and just because the half hour runs out. Go back to Ezekiel, if you will, just a second, because it's a point that I think I want to point out, because it is the main argument to those who feel that this great invasion has to take place before the tribulation begins because of a seven-year element. And so that reason I want to take you back. Back to Ezekiel 39. And as a result, then, of this great destruction of the armies of Russia on the hills of Israel, verse 9 of Ezekiel 39. See, we ran out of time last week, and I neglected to think of it when we started this program. But now verse 9, and they that dwell in the cities of Israel shall go forth and shall set on fire and burn the weapons, that is, the residue of these great armies, Both the shields and the bucklers, the bows and the arrows, and the handstays, spears. Now, like I said, Ezekiel writes in the language of his day, but in our present time, he would have had to say, and their artillery, and their tanks, and their trucks, and their armored personnel carriers, and what have you, the weapons of war. And they shall burn them. And they shall spoil those that spoil them, and rob those that rob them, saith the Lord. And it shall come to pass that day that I will give unto Gog a place there of graves, and so on and so forth. Verse 12, 7 months shall the house of Israel be burying the dead. And then when you finally come down to verse... I'm not seeing it. It's going to take a period of 7 years.
That was 9.
That in verse 9, yeah. And they shall set on fire and burn the weapons, both the shields and the buckler, the bows and the arrows, and the hand save, and they shall burn them with fire 7 years. Now people say, well, now... this can't take place inside the 7 years because that doesn't give enough time to finish it. But now here's my argument, and that's all it is. All the way through chronology of Scripture, and this really threw a curve at people for a long time, the Bible always ascribes a whole year to anything that covers a part of a year. In other words, if it's said that a king ruled 10 years, or if a king ruled 10 years and 1 month, the Bible would say he ruled 11 years. And so if we take that rule of thumb into effect here, if this great invasion would take place, say, in the 10th month after the Antichrist has signed that treaty, and there's still 2 months left in that first 12 months, then the Bible could refer to it as a full year. And so this is exactly how I like to look at it, that shortly after the Antichrist has signed this treaty, within, I think, the first 12 months, we'll have this great invasion, this destruction of the northern armies, and then they still have, in biblical chronology, 7 years to still burn the weapons. Now I got to make another comment on that burning. It may be out of date, but again, you never know. Way back in the late 60s, when we were still living in Iowa, I remember that there was a little news item in the Des Moines Register, which was the paper of choice at that time, that a Dutch scientist had perfected some sort of a process where he could actually make wood a better armor than steel. Now think about that for a minute. It's almost unbelievable. But he could make a wood product that would actually repel shells and so forth more than steel. And it was very economical, and so the Russian army just gobbled that thing up. And I remember when I first read it, I took it with a grain of salt. Because, you know, like Iris always says, people can write anything. They can just say anything. Now, well, here's another writer that is just writing to get people's attention. But then after the Six-Day War, which was in 1967, and you remember the Israeli army just annihilated the Arabs, the Egyptians, the Jordanians, and the Syrians, who had all been equipped by the Russians. And again in the Des Moines Register, and I carry that little clipping in my Bible until it turned yellow. Now, this would have been back, I suppose, in about 1969, shortly after the Seven-Day War, which was in 67. And this little article was a reporter interviewing an Israeli general. And he said to this general, well, now with all of this Russian equipment that you have captured, are you going to incorporate it into the Israeli army? And, you know, I that's why I cut it out. You know what that Israeli general's answer was? He said, no way. He said, that stuff burns like cardboard. See? Because it was made of this supposedly wood derivative. Now, whether that's still the case, I don't know. Maybe that's long obsolete. But if it is, then you see the Scripture again is so accurate that the Jewish people will literally take this equipment and use it as firewood, because, as the general said, it burns like cardwood. Now, I'm throwing that out. Just somebody asked me about it here a while back that they had read it, and I told him the very same thing I'm telling you. So So evidently there's still something to it. But I just put these things out so that you're aware of what you read in the news and what you hear in the news and so forth, and that these things are possible. Now, it may not be anymore. Maybe the Russians quit using that stuff, but I know at the time of the Six-Day War, that was the response. It burns like cardwood. Israel will go about burying the dead and so on and so forth. Now, let's come back then to Revelation. I think I've picked up everything that I accidentally skipped. And like I tell people, see, that's what I like about being informal. I don't have to be so cut and dried and be so perfect, because I'm trusting that my audience isn't looking for that. They're just looking for ways that they can learn and have things put out on their own level. So now then, in chapter 6 again, as we come to the end of the chapter, verse 17, let me repeat it. For the great day of his wrath is come. Now, always remember this, that the Bible does not refer to the tribulation as being the actual wrath of God until the last 3.5 years. The first 3.5 are going to be bad enough, but it's not referred to as the outpouring of God's wrath until we reach this point. The last 3.5 years are going to be beyond human comprehension. Now, let's go back for just a moment to Matthew 24 again, where Jesus himself is speaking of this very thing. Matthew 24. Come back to where we left off in verse 8. All these things that are taking place, the appearance of the Antichrist, the great invasion, the tremendous loss of life, 1/4 of the world, and all the attending pestilence and famine. Remember, he called in verse 8 the beginning of sorrows. It's not the wrath of God yet. Now verse 9. Then, that is in this first half, they shall deliver you up to be afflicted. And remember, that's why I took you back to Jeremiah 30. It is the time of Jacob's trouble. This is predominantly God dealing with the nation of Israel, although it will be worldwide. And they shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations. Now, we see that that is already coming on the scene, where the hatred of the Jew is already bubbling to the surface. It's going to keep increasing. You shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. Verse 10, many shall be offended and shall betray one another and shall hate one another. Now, this is Jesus himself speaking, see? And many false prophets shall rise and shall deceive many. Verse 12, and because iniquity shall abound. Now, you want to remember, the church is gone. And see, today, the church is really the only break on wickedness across the world. It's the Christian influence that still holds things in check. It's gone. And so it'll be just like lifting a great dam out of the river, and you have that reservoir suddenly just washing down that riverbed, taking everything in its wake. I think that's going to be the picture of iniquity and wickedness that will break loose as soon as the church is removed. I'm talking about the true church. All right? Verse 13. Here's a verse that has been twisted and lifted out of context and mistaught, I think, all too often. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. Now, we're not talking about salvation here. This is not salvation. We're talking about a physical surviving. And now let me take you back to Isaiah. We'll come to this again later, but for now, just turn to Isaiah chapter 24. Isaiah chapter 24. And this is exactly why Jesus said what he said, that to those who are fortunate enough to have come through this whole 7 years, they will see the light at the end of the tunnel. Now, you got Isaiah 24, and you can just begin at verse 1, and we'll run off rather lightly here, and for sake of time, behold, The Lord maketh the earth empty and maketh it waste and turneth it upside down. Now, we're dealing with the tribulation here. And it shall be as with the people, so with the priest, and so on and so forth. Verse 3, the land shall be utterly emptied, utterly spoiled, for the Lord hath spoken the word. The earth mourneth and fadeth away. The world languisheth and fadeth. The haughty people of the earth delay. It's going to even hit the super, super rich, see? Verse 5, the earth also defiled unto the inhabitants thereof, because they have transgressed the laws, changed the ordinance, broken the everlasting covenant. Now verse 6, and watch this carefully. Therefore hath the curse devoured the earth. Remember what I said? This whole reason for the tribulation is to pay off the curse. It's going to be delivered from the curse. The earth is. All right? Read back in verse 6. And they that dwell therein are desolate. In other words, because of all the cataclysmic events that have come on the planet. Therefore the inhabitants of the earth are burned. In other words, there will be, I think, a tremendous amount of nuclear activity. What are the last four words? And few men what? Left. In other words, there are going to be survivors. They're going to somehow or other come through these awful 7 years. Now, if you'll come back quickly with me then to Matthew 24. Matthew 24. And remember, Jesus is speaking from within his earthly ministry time frame. He's still on the earth. Reading verse 13 again, but he that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved. They will survive. And then verse 14. And what's the next word? This. Speaking of that which was contemporary with his day. And this gospel of the kingdom. Now, a lot of people twist that and make it the gospel of grace. And some people will fly off the handle and say, well, you're saying there's more than one gospel? Yes, I've said it for 20-some years, and I still say it. They didn't know the gospel of grace at this time. Christ hadn't died yet. He hadn't been raised from the dead yet. There could be no gospel as we know it. It hadn't been accomplished. But what gospel did they know? The king is coming. See? The king is here. And it was called by Jesus over and over through the Gospels, the gospel of the kingdom. The good news that the king is ready to set up his kingdom as it was being offered to Israel. Now then, Jesus is using that backdrop. The kingdom gospel that he and the 12 had been preaching for almost 3 years now, not quite. But he said, this gospel of the kingdom. Now, what's the next verb? Present or future? It's future tense verb. This gospel of the kingdom shall, at a future time, be preached in all the world for a witness unto how many? All nations. And then shall the end come. Now, you see, that's so simple if you just put it in its right perspective. So many people have lifted this verse out of context. Good friends of mine have lifted this verse out of context and said we have to get the gospel into every nation before the Lord can come. That's not what Jesus was talking about. The gospel of grace is a calling out of a people for his name, absolutely. But it's going to end. The tribulation is going to come in. And then Jesus said the same gospel of the kingdom that he preached in his 3 years of ministry will be proclaimed again during the tribulation. Now, can you keep that, put that up here? That the gospel of the kingdom. Now, stop and think. If that good news is proclaimed to every nation on earth, the king is coming. In how long a time frame? Well, from day one, it's just 7 years. The king is coming. And that will be the message, and we'll pick it up probably in our next program, that the 144,000 young Jewish men will preach to the world, the king is coming, and indeed he will be, see? And so this verse is spoken by Jesus himself with regard to no mention again of the church age. He skips over it from his ministry to the tribulation. But during that 7-year period, the 144,000 will proclaim the gospel of the kingdom, the King is coming.
Thank you for joining us again for Through the Bible with Les Feldick. If you'd like to order audio tapes, videos, or any of our printed material, you may do so by writing Les Feldick Ministries, Route 1, Box 760, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. That's Les Feldick Ministries, Route 1, Box 760, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. Or you can call us toll-free if you'd like at 1-800-369-7856. That's 1-800-369-7856. Remember, this is a faith ministry, and your participation with us is greatly appreciated. Again, our address is Les Feldick Ministries, Route 1, Box 760, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. And our phone is 1-800-369-7856. Thanks again for listening, and please join us next time for Through the Bible with Les Feldick.